Well, hello there, dear listener. Before we begin, real quick, I would like to remind you all that this is a two-part podcast with Andy Burcham, the voice of the Auburn Tigers football, men's basketball, and baseball teams. This, again, is the second half of the podcast. If you want to listen to the first, go and listen to it wherever all podcasts are, wherever you're listening to this right now. It was posted a week prior to this one. So I hope you all can enjoy that just as much. This week, we are going to be diving into more of his family life, his personal life, and how that has changed in a whirlwind over the past couple of years. Mr. Burcham has a couple of interesting paradoxes. Him and his wife, they never had kids before until now. And Andy Burcham got his dream job in one of the most tragic circumstances that ever happened, and it really just shows how awesome of a guy Andy Burcham and his wife Jan are. But without further ado, I'm going to let him tell the story with his own mouth. Here is part two of Andy Burcham, the voice of the Auburn Tigers. I think one of the most incredible things that's come out of that terrible situation was the fact that you and your wife decided to actually take in the Bramlett's son, Josh, without being parents prior to that. Can you kind of talk about what that transition was like, what it's been like for this past a little less than a year?
I don't know if I can describe it. We had gone to dinner, as we did many times, on a Friday night before an Auburn football game, probably back in October of 2018. And we did that quite often, just all of us, just Rod and Paul and my wife Jan and I, the kids sometimes. And we got together for an Italian meal in town. And we had, you know, it was just typical discussion, life, school, work, jobs, whatever. And they said, we need to ask you a question. And they said, we're working on our will right now, and we need to know if something should happen to us, would you consider being the guardians of Joshua and Shelby? And at the time, Shelby, their daughter, was still not of legal age in the state of Alabama. So we said, yeah, we need a little time to think about that. And it wasn't about a couple of days later in the office that I told Rod, I said, yes, we'd be honored to do that. Obviously never thinking that something like that would occur. And then May 25th it happens, and we were, Jan and I were in Huntsville for our niece's graduation, high school graduation. And we were with the family, a little bowling graduation party in Huntsville when we got the call that the accident had occurred. And so dealing with all of the aspects of that day, the reality of Joshua now will become, we will become the legal guardians of Joshua, and Joshua will come to live with us. That starts to sink in. And the papers had not quite been signed yet through the lawyer, so we had some legal maneuverings to go through, and with no trouble at all, everything was done quickly and efficiently, and then in midsummer Joshua came to live with us. And you're right, we had never been, this is my second marriage. Jan is my second and last wife. This is Jan's first marriage, but we were in our early 40s when we got married, and I never had children in my first marriage, and we have not had children in my second marriage, Jan's first. And so we've known Joshua since the day he was born. We were in the hospital after Joshua was born with Rod and Paula, but never in this situation where we're the guardians then. So instead of being kind of the quasi fun aunt and uncle, so to speak, we now become the guardians. And he's in the midst of his sophomore year at Auburn High School, turned 16 learned to drive, got his driver's license, got his first car, his first job, and that type of thing. So we're experiencing all of this together and relying on a lot of our friends and family that have been parents and have gone through this time of life just to say, hey, are we doing this right? You know, what should we be doing and that type of thing? So I don't know how to quite describe what this last nearly year has been like, but it's like no other time in our lives. We've, especially this past summer was, if we had known all the things that would occur, with this, boy, it would have been, it was daunting enough as it was occurring, but had we known all the things that would be coming, it would have been overwhelming, for us at that point. Not that and you know what? That doesn't change. It's not like we've mastered this. Quite the contrary. We're learning each and every day what it's like to be parents or guardians of a 16-year-old.
What do you feel like has been you and your wife, what do you feel like your guys' biggest lesson has been from the past year or so? From being new parents.
Yeah. You never stop learning. And you know, there are days where we go to bed at night and, you know, we'll say, this was a good day. This was a good day. And then you're right back in the next day and you're just wondering what in the world is going on. You know, there's never, we never, and this is probably a flaw in my personality. I always want to get to that point where I feel that I've accomplished the task. And I never feel like I'm to that point in this relationship. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's always something coming up to learn from, to learn how to handle, a situation. And, that's probably the one thing that, and listen, before all of this occurred, Jan and I were safe in our jobs, enjoyed our jobs. We looked forward to traveling in July because July is the one month of the year that we knew we had time and there were no games going on and Jan's job would allow we could do our traveling. And really that was our lives. We've always had a rescue dog in the house. And we've added not only Joshua to our home, but the Bramblet, dog as well. So now we have two dogs in the house and it's a continual learning situation for us and a situation obviously that we never dreamed that we would be in until this last year.
So how has your relationship with Jan, how has that grown over the past year or so?
Well, there's no one in this world that I would want to do it with other than her. And I'm not saying that it hasn't been tough at times and puts a strain. And for parents out there, they're going, yeah, you know, you're not telling us anything new, but it is new to us. So allow me that. Jan is very organized. She is a problem solver by nature. And that's why she's so good at the job that she does. She's pretty even keeled. I'm more of the emotional one. She kind of, she talks me off the ledge from time to time, you know? And, so we've had to rely on each other even more so, in this year, and we've both lost our fathers, since our marriage. We've lost grandparents since we've been married. We've gone through job changes and things like that. But nothing like this last year has been for us. And I can't imagine anyone in this world that I would have wanted to go through it with, other than Jan. For sure.
Absolutely. So transitioning back into, career and work life, I'd like to ask you just real quick. I've had on this podcast before Wes Durham, the Atlanta Falcons play-by-play announcer. And I talked to him a little bit about just the experience of calling a game, and he always talked about having or the attempt to try to reach the perfect game. And I wanted to ask you, what to you is a perfect game? What do you come after a broadcast and call content after you finished a broadcast?
That's a very good question, Michael. I don't think I've ever even approached what a perfect game would be like, because there's always that point in the game where you can think back to and say, you know what, I should have handled this differently. I shouldn't have gotten that upset about an official's call, or that disappointed about a play in the game, or if you mess up and you call the wrong person's name, or give the wrong down and yardage and that type of thing. There's always those things. But I guess for me, and I always talk to people after ball games, and I talk to our crew about calls. And there are some games, quite frankly, you walk away from, you go, you know what? I wasn't at my best today for whatever reason. I wasn't as good as I'd like to be today. And then there are games that you walk away from, and regardless of the outcome, regardless if it's an Auburn win or an Auburn loss, you walk away going, you know what? We had a good call today. We had a good broadcast. We kept it even keel. We didn't let our emotions take over in the broadcast. We called the information correctly and gave it some color, so to speak, some excitement. But, you know, I will never forget the feeling after this year's or this past year's Iron Bowl. It had been such a good start to that season for the Auburn football team. And then, you know, you lose down at Florida. You lose a heartbreaker at LSU. And Auburn played LSU better than anybody did all year long, including the championship game against Clemson. You lose in disappointing fashion to Georgia. And then it comes down to the Iron Bowl. And you get to be a part of a classic game, a 48-45 mm-hmm. ball game. And it's a game that has a lot of ebbs and flows and ups and downs. And you get to be a part of that. And I can remember walking from Jordan-Hare Stadium across the parking lot at Beard East Coliseum to my car where it was parked. And this is a long day. I mean, I get to the ballpark 3 hours before our show goes on the air, and that's 3 hours before game time. And then after the game, Coach Malzahn and I do his TV show. So you've been there, especially for a home game. You've been there for a long, long time. And I always go in early, and then I drive home. And then my wife and I sit and talk about the game and maybe have a bite to eat together. But I'll never forget the feeling of walking from Jordan-Hare Stadium across that Beard East Memorial Coliseum parking lot to my car. And what struck me is you got to be a part of that game. You got to be the voice for Auburn fans for that game. You got to call those two pick sixes. You got to call that Auburn win in an Iron Bowl, and just how fortunate, how blessed I was to be a part of that. That's what, to me, and by no means am I saying that I had a perfect game that day. I certainly did not. But I had a feeling of contentment and being blessed to be a part of that broadcast crew that day, and to be a part of that Auburn football program that day, enough that I could call that game.
So aside from that game, out of all the sports and all the broadcasts that you've done, what would you say has been your favorite game to call?
Oh, boy. For football, that would be number one for me, is that Iron Bowl game. Men's basketball this year, take your pick. The LSU game with the last-second win. The Tennessee game, which was the last game that Auburn played before everything was shut down due to COVID-19, that was a fun game for me to call. Baseball, boy, there are a ton of great games. The win against North Carolina this past year that sent Auburn to the College World Series. The David Ross home run back in 1997 down at Florida State and getting to go to the World Series that year. And there are a number of games for women's basketball that I got to call. In 97, getting to call that team's SEC tournament championship when no one thought they could win one game at that tournament, let alone four in 4 days. So there's not just one game that stands out. There are many. And one day when I look back on this career, and I hope it's none too soon, maybe I'll come up with a list of games. But those are a couple. Those are just a couple of those games that stand out to me right now.
So you talked a little bit, and, you know, Auburn basketball especially, and all of the spring sports kind of getting shut down over the coronavirus, COVID-19. How have you seen these teams handle this completely unprecedented situation?
Matthew, I think folks have done a great job of handling it. There's no question that it had to be very, very disappointing for a Samir Dowdy not to get a chance to play in the SEC tournament or the NCAA tournament, or for a Yvonne Rabula on the Auburn men's golf team and not get a chance to play in his last year at Auburn and defend his SEC tournament championship as the medalist. I think back to the Auburn equestrian team, undefeated going into the postseason, and favored, highly favored to win a seventh national championship for Auburn. And for a guy like Connor Davis or Alyssa Rivera that played baseball and softball for Auburn, their senior years, both outstanding young individuals and great players, and all of a sudden their season, their career perhaps, is cut short. And then these coaches, you know, it's got to be disappointing for Bruce Pearl and Mickey Dean and Greg Williams and Butch Thompson and all those coaches out there that's not getting the opportunity to coach those teams this year. And yet they've handled it so very well. They've led their teams well, making sure that their players are safe and getting the job done in the classroom that they need to do. The administration at Auburn, from the leadership in the athletic department with Alan Green and his executive staff, to Dr. Gouge at Samford Hall, the Auburn president, how they've handled it. I think it's remarkable what Auburn Mayor Ron Anders and Opelika Mayor Gary Fuller have done in leading their two respective cities in this. And then just, you know, go right up the chain. I was texting with Mayor Anders the other day, just checking in on him. I've known Ron for a long, long time, and just saying, you know, how are things going? You're doing a great job. And he's like, he said, there's no playbook for something like this. I said, well, right or wrong, you're writing the playbook right now. You're writing a playbook that folks will look back on and say, you know what? That was a good idea. We need to do that in this again, or learn from the mistakes that folks are making. So I think, and it's not just here; it's all over. We're seeing great leadership, but specifically here on the Auburn campus and in this community, and across the state, the folks that are doing such a very good job in an unprecedented time, Matthew.
So my last question, really short and simple: why Auburn? Why Auburn for you? Why has this area, this team, why these teams, why is this area so important to you?
Well, for one, it's my job. It's the team that I represent. And I've taken that to heart since the very first time that I put on a headset and broadcast that Auburn women's basketball game back in November of 1988. And this is not a school that I attended. My wife, Jan, has 2 degrees from Auburn, her bachelor's and her PhD from Auburn. But it is not a school that I attended. But it is a school that I have called games for now for close to 32 years. It's a community that I've lived longer in Lee County, Alabama, than I lived anywhere else in my entire life. So this is my home. And I've had opportunities to move back to Illinois, where I still have family, and decided that I needed to stay here. I had friends here. I put roots down here. I many times, Matthew, in jobs that I've had, I've talked to folks that are either from Auburn originally or came to Auburn to go to school. And many of those folks went away for a career. But all of those folks that I've talked to have come back to Auburn, whether it's to come back for a job in Auburn, or perhaps it was to come back to retire in Auburn. And a lot of these are professional athletes, folks that could live anywhere. You know, they've made enough money in their careers, they could move anywhere. But they've chosen to come back to Auburn to raise a family or to retire. And so I just think this is such a unique community. And when I say community, I'm talking Auburn, Opelika, Lee County, and certainly a unique campus. I have a podcast coming out with Roddy Gaines coming out on Friday at auburntigers.com. One of the greatest athletes in Auburn history, certainly the greatest swimmer in Auburn history, won 3 gold medals at the 1984 Summer Olympics, and does such a great job now as a commentator. He'll be working his 7th Olympics coming up next summer in Japan. And he talked about it. You know, he had never been to Auburn until he was recruited at Auburn back in the late 70s, I think 77. And he knew immediately when he got on campus and was recruited at Auburn how special this place was. And that has never changed for Roddy. And you talk to a lot of people. John Mengel, for example. Here's another example. John Mengel was a great basketball player for Auburn in the 70s. Still holds the Auburn single game scoring record. He scored 60 against Alabama in his senior year. And John went on and had a great career in the NBA and had a flourishing career as a broadcaster. And then helping search firms, and could have lived anywhere. He grew up in Indiana, worked a great deal of his career in Chicago, and yet he came back to Auburn and he still does some work, but this is the community that he wanted to be in. And I don't know how to describe it other than it's an incredibly special place. It's still small enough where you know a lot of folks. People care for you. And listen, we're seeing it now, you know, with the amount of people that are just reaching out to make sure that their neighbors are okay, or their workers, the folks that they work with every day are okay. All right. Folks in their church are making sure that people have food and care. And I know that I'm not naive to think that this doesn't happen in other communities, but it certainly happens with the Auburn community.
Absolutely. Well, hey, thank you again for your time. I really do appreciate you coming on here. Again, this has been Andy Burcham, the voice of Auburn Tiger football, men's basketball, and baseball. Mr. Burcham, thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Matthew.
Thank you again, everyone who has been listening. This has been the Lifetime Podcast. We have a wonderful interview with someone from the SEC Network and ESPN coming up next week. If you want to support more sharing of life stories, drop down into the description with the Patreon link. You'll get exclusive access to a couple of things there as well, some little perks and benefits. But really, a greatest thanks of all to Andy Burcham for coming on here. I really have appreciated it. This has been one of my favorite interviews that I've been able to conduct, and it really has been an honor. Thank you, the listener, for listening in to the Lifetime Podcast. I'll talk at you next week.